Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. One of the most important economic issues of our time in Minnesota and elsewhere is this. How can rural towns, many afflicted by high unemployment and worried about younger residents leaving for large cities, attract entrepreneurs? What can towns and policymakers do to help business thrive in the local economy? What are the opportunities? After all, nearly half our state lives in rural areas. So I'm joined by two guests to discuss this topic. Joan Goldstein is Commissioner for Economic Development in Vermont, and she is on the phone. Welcome, Joan.
Welcome. Thanks.
I'm glad you could join us. And Ben Winchester is Research Fellow at the Extension Center for Community Vitality at the University of Minnesota, and he's here with me in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
And we want to hear from you. I mean, if you're in rural Minnesota, call us to tell us what's going on. I mean, what are you observing? Are jobs being created? Are jobs being lost? And if you're thinking about moving to a rural town, are you worried your business may not thrive in the local economy? So call us, 651-227-6000, toll-free, 800-242-2828. And online, it's talk at nprnews.org. So, Joan, I'm going to start off with you, and it's a broad brush question, but just to start off, give us what's the economic state in rural Minnesota, in rural Vermont?
So, overall, the state is a very small population. It has just shy of 630,000 people in the entire state, and it's predominantly rural. The largest city, to give you an idea, the largest city is Burlington, Vermont, which has about 45,000 people. So the scale is a heck of a lot smaller than elsewhere around the nation. We most of the activity, and I'd say a lot of the economic activity, population growth, happens in the greater Burlington area, which is really the MSA, the Metropolitan Statistical Area, which includes the county in which Burlington resides, Chittenden County, and also Franklin County. Those two counties account for a third of the population. So there is a significant concentration of economic activity in that neck of the woods, which is the northwestern part of the state. So there's an unevenness, right? So
right.
There's some lots of activity, great things happening, and elsewhere in the state, the population is not growing. So that is a difficulty on so many different levels, from small towns making sure that there's enough property tax to pay the freight. The school systems have declining populations of children, so it's even more expensive to educate those that are there. And the businesses have a hard time recruiting workers because of that population drain, I'll call it.
Right. And so Vermont's gotten a lot of attention because of this plan to attract people to rural areas of Vermont by paying, up to $10,000 to move there.
Yes. So we, the governor and the rest of the administration pitched a plan which was fairly comprehensive. Heretofore, on economic development, we never were in the business of trying to recruit people, per se, right? It was always about attracting business, and we're still very much in that business of attracting business. But the realization that we really do need to recruit people to the state has hit us for the last several years, and the governor proposed a package of many, many different initiatives, which include incentives, helping to pay for homes, a number of things. And the only thing that really survived was this remote worker payment. And it's just a piece of an overarching theme, which is that a recognition that we need people. And the remote worker initiative is you could get paid up to $5,000, a maximum of 2 years, for reimbursement of expenses for moving or for setting up a remote station or for paying into a co-working space.
Okay. So, Ben, what do you think of the idea? Is this something we should be adopting here in Minnesota?
Right. I'm a big fan. Ultimately, I think historically our traditional economic development activities have been centered around industrial recruitment. You know, we want to bring in the business that will ultimately bring in the jobs. And I would say it's a well-worn argument between chicken and egg. Do jobs bring people or do people bring jobs? And in the early 1900s, I would say it would be jobs bring people to your area. But today it can be both. And so for me, the program we hear out of Vermont really much, very much signals an effort of positivity that, you know, they are going to be a welcoming state. They want to bring people in, especially in these more rural communities where you may actually be landlocked. You don't have a lot of open housing. So I think there's a lot of strategies at play here in terms of people recruitment that we don't think about, but I think are vital as we move forward because we are about to enter the tightest labor market in rural areas. We're already there, but we are about to enter the tightest labor market.
So what do you mean by a tight labor market in the rural areas? Because we always hear that it's bad.
Right. Yeah. So I think the term is the brain drain, right? As the baby boomers are retiring, we got, you know, seniors and baby boomers are leaving industry. And when they leave, there's going to be this drain. Who's going to maintain these businesses? How do we move these businesses to the next crop of people that want to own them? This is called what we call business succession. So as we enter what we call the silver tsunami, right? We got a lot of folks that either want to sell their businesses or people on a transition to retirement. Who's going to fill in these spots? And it's here that we see the point that labor is ultimately going to have an advantage because there are only so many positions available, but there are going to be more employees. So the employees will actually have an option, fewer employees. So the employees are going to have an option between 2 to 3 different jobs within their kind of classification. So what's going to be an advantage is, you know, and in Vermont there, they've got an Office of Economic and Community Development, which is very unique in the sense that they acknowledge that there may be aspects, non-job related aspects that they have hold some importance in terms of why people choose one town over another. So when we do talk about people recruitment, it is not just about the job, but it is also about the life that they bring, their spouses, their kids, the region that they live in, the kind of recreation they want to do. So it's a little bit more complex, but it's not off the radar in terms of what community development's done in the past.
So, Joan, are you seeing this, the impact of the aging of the population in rural Vermont?
Absolutely. When we talk to employers, there are people that have significant years of tenure, and they're all about to retire in the next decade. And so it's a real fear about how that's going to hamper their growth. And we recognize this as well in our workforce development programs. We're trying to train and develop and make children aware of the opportunities that exist in their own backyards. So the idea of recruitment is not stand alone. It's recruit what we don't have and develop what we do have so that we attack it from every angle to be able to replace those workers that are retiring.
So let me just give out the number again, and we want to hear about your experience in rural Minnesota. You're a young person. Do you feel you have to leave for opportunity if you've opened or bought a business? You know, what has been your experience? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free, 800-242-2828. Online, it's talk@nprnews.org. And now let's go to the phones, and we're going to go to Deb. You're in St. James.
Yes, I recently moved to St. James from Mountain Lake.
So where's St. James?
It's about 45 minutes west of Mankato.
Okay.
So south central. And Mountain Lake is another 15 minutes west from there. And the Economic Development Association had interested parties, manufacturing parties, but they looked around and didn't see enough daycare for their workers, so they didn't come.
Oh.
And the city kept trying to get more people interested in daycare, offering to help set them up in daycare and whatnot, and the one of the families that did daycare out of their home wanted to retire, and they were willing to help train in people, but nobody wanted to do it.
Oh, this is a really important issue if you're trying to attract younger people or keep younger people. I'll go to both Ben and Joan, but let's start off with you, Ben. What is your reaction to this about, you know, daycare?
Yeah, right. This is a key issue for those people with kids. Ultimately, this is a community level issue, but I'll start with there has never not been a daycare shortage problem in this country or in the state. It's to what extent are we doing better or worse at it today? But I think what exacerbates this issue is, again, that kind of silver tsunami. We've got people who have done home-based daycare, and we've got to move to centers now, too. So we start to see people moving away from that as an option. So ultimately, where do people go? And we're starting to see some private sector solutions here, too, where you can't just rely upon the community, quote unquote, to solve this problem. Ultimately, businesses need to do this hand in hand with our local partners. And that is where we see things like senior facilities adding on a daycare to their center, because ultimately senior facilities can't find any employees because the employees that would work there might have kids. And then if they don't have any daycare, they won't have any employees. So we're starting to see the melding and the collaboration between private sector avenues here that might actually provide some solutions to this problem. But at the same time, we just don't have a good grasp on where exactly are we at in this. What are some, I would say, broad solutions we can bring to this? I know the Center for Rural Policy and Development has been doing research. I expect they'll have a report out here in the next few months to talk about that situation here in Minnesota.
You know, John, I don't know how much of an issue this is in Vermont, but in a lot of resort areas, when I've gone in rural Minnesota and rural Wisconsin, you know, and you talk to the owners, what they'll say is, look, you know, we have these low wage jobs. And if you actually do look at the daycare that's there, the economics actually don't even work for somebody to pay that amount of money for what I'm paying to go to work.
That is correct. I mean, it is an issue here for sure. In fact, there have been some centers set up that had a collaborative of employers gathering together to help start it and operate it. It's not taken off as a overarching theme. I would love to see that. I would also love to see incentivized private sector to invest in these centers. It doesn't have to be right on site, but at least somewhere centrally located where several employers could benefit and their employees can benefit from this. So, it is a severe problem, especially in the more rural communities.
All right, let's go.
It'll prevent people from going to work.
Yeah, so let's go to Maggie. And Maggie, you're in Wabasha.
Yeah. Hi. I really liked what you said about people moving to areas rather than moving for the jobs. My husband and I recently moved from St. Louis Park to Wabasha, which is about 65 miles southeast of the Twin Cities on the Mississippi River. And we have three little kids and just wanted more green space, less traffic. We wanted to pay less for our house and just it's been a great experience, and I'm a freelance writer, and so I was able to bring my business with me, basically, and work remotely and drive up to the cities when needed. But I feel like it's a lot more doable now because of, wonderful things like the internet, and
right.
It's been a great experience.
So, yeah, and so I want to ask both Joan and Ben on this issue about the internet. So here you're moving to Wabasha, and, you know, it has some resources there. One of my big puzzles is when I moved to Minnesota in 1996, my actually first event was in rural Minnesota. And the discussion of that event, of this conference, was the internet in rural Minnesota and how businesses needed better wireless, better broadband back then, better broadband. And we're still having that conversation. If I do my math right, this is 2018. So, Ben, internet. If you're going to have a small business, if you're going to be a freelance writer and you're in rural Minnesota, you need good internet connections.
Right. So her story, I would like to think she's unique, but thankfully not. Like, we've got lots of people like her across the state. We call it the brain gain, and that is people in their 30s and 40s that, people with kids too, that move out to rural areas for quality of life, for safety and security, for the low cost of housing. So we've got this whole group of people that move out. They bring businesses with them. We've seen this in our business success succession research too. But here in Minnesota, since the time you've done your first event to today, we have since developed the Office of Broadband Development here in the state that provides stimulus grants to agencies across the state that are looking to provide broadband across the state. Minnesota, we are incredibly lucky to have the resources we do to help build this stable of broadband across rural areas. I would caution folks that to say that we can't paint a broad brush about broadband is lacking in rural areas. Honestly, I lived in Hancock, Minnesota, in western Minnesota for a number of years, and my internet there was faster than the internet I've got in St. Cloud. So in many ways, we have to be careful about how we pitch it. That's not to say there aren't issues, but I think if we are looking for solutions of how to advance fiber and broadband to all of Minnesota, we can actually look to rural areas as for models of how to do that.
Joan,
That's absolutely true in Vermont as well. Obviously, Burlington's got a gigabit of fiber. There's another town on the eastern side of the state that's got gigabit of fiber. And then there's a bunch of Upper Valley towns, which is borders on the Connecticut River with New Hampshire, and a small fiber multi-community organization got together. They're called EC Fiber, and they were able to bring fiber to many, many remote locations. So, yes, it's very – you can't generalize. Yes, there are still issues with last mile.
Okay.
But it's definitely improved.
So it's going in the right direction. It's getting better.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, let's go back to – we're going to go to Don. And, Don, you're in St. Cloud?
I was passing through St. Cloud, yes.
Okay.
20 years ago, I moved from St. Paul to north of Crosby, Minnesota.
Okay.
And I spent 2.5 years in the Twin Cities as a courier. I spent 3.5 years in southwest Minnesota at an agribusiness. And just recently, I got a job where I get to be home every night and make good money. Last week, I got, finally, broadband.
Okay, so you're seeing opportunities in rural Minnesota.
Yes, sir.
And this is kind of what Ben was talking about, that is this that companies are starting to look more for workers in the area?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear.
I've got a problem with the criminal history, so people weren't desperate enough to hire me until just recently.
Well, that's one of the benefits of a really strong economy. And so I'm glad that things are working out for you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So now let's go to Paul. And Paul, you are in Fauston. Did I say that correctly?
Hey, yeah, good morning. Yeah, I live in Fauston here in northwest Minnesota. I'm originally from the Iron Range, and I've been listening with great interest about your conversation this morning. This is great to hear about how broadband access is improving rural Minnesota job opportunities, but it came at a cost of years of advocacy by a lot of people who are telling kind of, they're being the town crier saying, hey, we need this, we need this, we need this. For years, it was never really thought of as a utility. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing a lot of communities start to think of broadband access as more of really yielding a lot of benefits.
Well, I think, yes, and just the way the world has gone, it's just and I think it's very difficult to operate a business today without having some kind of broadband access, good internet access.
Yep. It certainly makes it easier for people to choose to work remotely, but there are a lot of other kinds of jobs, especially in northwest Minnesota here, where a person with either little or no skill training can get a job working $12 to $15 an hour, like up at DigiKey up in Thief River or at Team in near Bagley. And that competes, those jobs compete for a lot of other businesses in our area, making it somewhat of a tight job market. And businesses have responded and they're starting to offer better health benefits because of that in many cases, if they're able to. But there is still a crunch by those kind of donut hole businesses that are mom and pop shops that can't offer all those benefits or people used to call them fringe things, but they're starting to become more necessary.
Okay.
We see places like Grand Rapids in the area offering bike trails to increase quality of life. And that can happen anywhere. It just requires community members to come together and decide that they want something nice and they're willing to work for it. But the one thing that's really kind of putting the crunch on northwest Minnesota right here is a severe child care crisis. We have about, in our area, one spot available for every four spots of needed childcare. And that really puts a crimp on businesses who are willing to hire.
So thank you. So Joan, does what he's saying in terms of what's happening in the job market, but also with this childcare, I mean, does this resonate with you?
Oh, completely. And I think one of the advantages of a tight labor market is that only the best employers are going to get the employees. So it means that in some cases, wages are rising, benefits are improving. There's essential, you know, you have to treat your employees right and you'll retain them. So I think that that's a benefit of the tight labor market. The childcare issue is another one. There are certain employers in the state that are giving stipends to employees to help pay for childcare. So the employers that are up and with it and responding to the market are going to get the cream of the crop, and that's kind of the right way of a market mechanism, you know, in work.
Yeah, there's some a lot of wonderful things happen with the tight labor market. And so we're going to go right to, Chester, Iowa. And let's see, is it Teresa?
Yes.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right. I wanted to add, I mean, I have had a few jobs in rural Minnesota down near Leroy, which is about an hour south of Rochester.
Okay.
And the manufacturing jobs around here, I'm a welder and a machinist, they offer about the same as you can get working at McDonald's up in Rochester, like $12, $13 an hour as a welder and a machinist. So what I'm doing is actually starting up my own business, because a lot of rural welding shops are shutting down and there's just not enough young people that want to do that kind of labor, because you can make more money working at Costco, whereas my husband, he works at Crenlo up in Rochester, and people would rather work at Costco and make the same wage.
Right, because everywhere. So what in your business is, who are your customers and how are you getting your business?
A lot of my customers are people that have a lot of repairs that need to be done, basically picking up from where these old welding shops are leaving off, as well as Amish people. There's a lot of need in rural southeastern rural Minnesota for them to have metalworking done. So most of my clientele is through word of mouth.
Okay. And do you prefer running your own business, or would you prefer that you were working for a company that was paying a decent wage?
I would honestly rather work for a company paying a decent wage, because starting a business is really stressful, and it's just a lot of stuff way above my head. And healthcare is a whole nother issue that I don't even want to touch on.
That's another whole show. And yes, it is a big issue for people who are out there being entrepreneurs and, you know, trying to build a business. So, Ben, any reaction?
Yeah, I think Teresa's part of a real wave of people that are interested in doing their own thing. James Fallows talks about this in his Our Town's book about these young entrepreneurial folks who are moving to Sioux Falls, to Duluth. He's got roughly 30, I think, communities he visited across the country here. But it's kind of this wave that we've seen of, you know, the increase in craft breweries, just craft jobs, period. People are they're being woodworkers. So I think, in terms of, like, people look at the opportunities out there, unless, you know, businesses are either offering something different, that people will say, well, maybe I'll have, you know, a job that fits my life a little bit better. Again, that kind of work-life balance that we talk about with regards to people recruitment. But we do know, again, from our business succession research, that people are moving into these communities. They're buying businesses. 50% of the new business transitions that we see were people brand new to town. So I think it's something like two-thirds of our existing business crop are owned by baby boomers. So we've got we are ready for this wave of change. If you'd like to read more about that, we've got a link at z.umn.edu/business-succession.
Okay. And Joan, are you seeing in rural Vermont people being, there's always this debate, are people being pulled into entrepreneurship or are they being pushed into entrepreneurship? Are you seeing a lot of pushed into entrepreneurship?
It's a little bit of both. You know, sometimes people are starting fresh after working for a corporate, right? So I often said I'm a corporate urban refugee, and I moved to Vermont. I moved to Vermont without a job, and, you know, then the jobs came later. And And, you know, in our work with small businesses, you know, many of them are in their kind of second chapter or third chapter. So I do think that it represents it, there is a little bit of there's a pull. They always wanted to do their own thing.
Right.
And then sometimes they're pushed into it, especially in rural areas, because they may not be as many employers around to get the jobs there. So it's a very independent spirit, kind of scrappy entrepreneurialism that emanates just out of necessity.
So I want to follow up with this theme that Ben's been talking about, the aging of the population and the sort of brain gain. People in what they're been in their 40s, 30s, moving in, maybe left in their 20s. Are there things that you can do in economic development to encourage this sort of business succession, this business transition?
Sure. I think right off, communities need to emphasize the importance of succession, period, that we want to have a smooth transition. We don't want to do this in a lurch like many times we do if a family member gets sick and all of a sudden we need to deal with their home and, you know, what do we right. do as we're moving them out, right? We don't want to be in that situation in our small towns. But at the same time, we need to reduce the financial, the confidentiality barriers that you may have in small towns with regards to, you know, moving a business from one person to another. And then just lining up resources for people, letting them know that we've got SBDC funds or
SBDC funds
small business development right. Funds that might be available to help people do this work or help with business plans. I mean, so I think Teresa hit on some of this that, you know, it's a whirlwind. You want to start a business. Well, not only do you have to deal with the accounting, you have to deal with the marketing pieces, the kind of a back end work of doing business, plus the healthcare pieces. It's a complex picture. It's almost like you wish you had a business to help you be a business, right? So, you know, and, you know, the Ciroli Institute does a lot of work around entrepreneurship. And
the Ciroli Institute
is originally an individual, but they've got a model out there that looks at entrepreneurship that says, all right, you're either going to be good at doing something, you're going to be good at marketing, or you're going to be good at the financials. Pick one and find somebody to do the other two. So it is recognizing that. I think there's an idea out there that if you're going to be a quote-unquote entrepreneur, that you need to do it all, when in fact if you tell people, if you walk into an office and somebody tells you, hey, you need to do it all, it may immediately turn you off from that idea. And so what we see is a lot of people with high energy around a certain topic or something they've seen as a market opportunity, but get dissuaded by some of the organizational requirements you've got to actually run and start that business.
So, Joan, isn't this you know, your core or what you're trying to do?
Yes, it's a great point. We business succession planning, we hold seminars all over the state to raise awareness. And the idea is to try to get in as early as possible, like get the concept of when you start a business, you should have the end in mind, like how will you do succession planning? And it's very difficult. Some people, I mean, the most difficult question on succession planning is the valuation of the business. And that concept of what is the value of the business. Many times they end up not selling because they think it's worth more. You know, so there's a whole financial literacy component in that as well, especially the smaller businesses or the contractors, those types of businesses. So I really can't overestimate how important succession planning and starting early and having these often is the most important thing.
Okay, so let's go back to the phones and let's go to Justin in St. Cloud. How are you doing, Justin?
Hey, not too bad today. How are you guys?
Good. So what's your observation?
Well, I after listening to this conversation, I'm a community organizer in the area, and a lot of the rural townships in the St. Cloud Metro, I talk to a lot of young people who want to get a higher education, but because of financial burdens of taking care of their aging parents, childcare, they don't really feel like they're kind of trapped. And so part of the conversation on broadband in greater Minnesota is how would that expand education opportunities for young people to start their businesses, to stay in their communities? I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were on how broadband in greater Minnesota could expand education opportunities.
All right. Joan, let's just start with you.
Sure. I mean, the broadband is crucial, especially as in rural areas. You want to make online courses as readily available as possible, so broadband connectivity is crucially important. You know, we have many college, the state college system as well as private colleges and graduate centers who offer significant amount of online, which would reduce the, you know, travel time, all the rest of it. So, I would just agree.
Ben, anything to add?
No, really. I think Joan hit it on the head that broadband affords an opportunity that we really hadn't had in years past with regards to the differentials of distance that essentially disappear when we've got broadband availability in our communities.
So now let's go to Jane. And Jane, you're in Minneapolis? Nope. And so let's go to Laura in Pequot Lakes. Laura?
Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Fine. How are you doing?
Good. So, question, observation?
Well, I have been in Minnesota for about 8 years. We moved here from Atlanta, and I live in Emily, and I have a business in Pequot Lakes, a retail business. And what I wanted to comment on was the effect of road construction. There has been extensive MnDOT road construction that's been going on through central Minnesota. And even though this construction was necessary and has been put off for many years and is being done at a time when it's, you know, economically best,
right,
it has a huge effect on the small businesses.
In what way?
In Pequot Lakes, it's had a huge effect because the highway bypassed the city, and that was what needed to happen. But the result of that is that people are driving by Pequot Lakes and they don't even know it's there. They get to Jenkins and they go, what the heck happened? Where happened to Pequot Lakes?
Ah.
And in Emily, their road construction is happening right now, and the entire downtown is completely destroyed. You can't get at anything. So the businesses are really suffering.
Yeah.
And this is a factor that small businesses have no control over. And even though you can look down the road and say, well, you know, in a few years, this is going to have a tremendous positive effect, the reality is for most small businesses, if you don't make it in the summer, you don't make it.
You don't make it.
You close.
Yeah. This is a perennial problem with infrastructure spending, right? We had that in St. Paul and Minneapolis when they're putting in the light rail. Now you are having this. And as we always say, you know, there are two seasons here. I imagine it's probably same in Vermont. There's winter and there's construction. So, Ben, any thoughts?
Well, I think just emphasizing the point of how crucial transportation is to our rural livelihoods, that, you know, nobody just lives and works and shops and plays in a single town, that ultimately we live in what I like to call the middle of everywhere. We live in one place, we may work in another. And much as Joan had mentioned about Vermont, like we are a state of regional centers all across the state, the Worthingtons, the Pipestone, the Marshall, the Wilmers. So ultimately, we've got kind of this capture area that goes out about 45 miles. So the extent to which transportation is kind of the crux to which the development of these regions occurred is kind of paramount. But ultimately, you know, with progress comes sacrifice.
Yeah. So let's go to Julia in Wisconsin. Julia?
Hi. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing? Now, I understand you're an entrepreneur.
I am an entrepreneur. I started out in Milltown, Wisconsin on an empty lot. In an 8x10 kiosk, and it's a drive-through coffee shop, and I had to bring bottled water in. I filled 12 bottles and emptied those bottles every day, washed them out with bleach at my house, and took what water I needed up there for the day. I started out making $20 a day, and then it was $50 a day, but my point is I kept going back every day. I was bound and determined that in this little town in Milltown, Wisconsin, I was going to make this place work. I was going to work this lot, and I was going to make Julia's Java drive-through happen. And so what I'm trying to say is there's also that word called perseverance and determination. We all have obstacles that get in our way, but we need to work hard, and we need to, we need to think positive. And of course, with small business, there are those bumps along the way that can hinder that, you know.
Right.
But I built a building. I bought the lot and I put up a structure, and I have a structure there in Milltown. It's a drive-through. You order on one side and you pick up on the other and you can come in. But I also live in a rural area where it's also dependent on Minnesota people that have cabins there.
Right.
And so I understand all the hard things that we have to go through. There's employees that need a decent wage, you know.
And exactly.
Being an owner after 8 years, I am still also pushing them up.
Well, so. Congratulations. I think that's wonderful. And I think the story, perseverance and entrepreneurship is probably just one word. You don't even need to take a breath in between the two. So I think that's wonderful what you've done. Well, what I want to do is go to Aaron, and Aaron is in Taylor Falls. Aaron?
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just thought I'd give you a call. I'd like to enjoy the conversation here. I am an entrepreneur. I'm a plumber, self-employed. I'm a one-man horse. I've been this way for probably about 10, 15 years. But I got my education in the city of St. Paul.
Okay.
My technical information. And I chose to move up into a rural area. I worked for the union for quite a while. And I always wanted to be on my own. And so I went and got my master's license and chose to move to a rural territory. And I really enjoy it. I'm a single father, and it allows me the flexibility to, as far as my children go, raising those two, picking them up, dropping off, and things like that. But I will say that child care has always been an issue, finding good quality child care. And then also, too, the issue with health insurance. I know it was brought up before. It's always been kind of a thorn in my side and how
it's expensive. It's so expensive for you.
Yes, it's very expensive. It makes it difficult.
Yeah.
Now, plumbing is something that's never going to go away. There's no fad. Everyone's going to need to use plumbing. But so that's always a good issue. But I also have a hard time finding people to help. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s, and a lot of the younger millennial-type people, plumbing is or the trades are, it just seems like kind of a thing that's not real popular as far as people going into it. So it's a constant demand. So I never really have a hard time finding work, but
yeah,
it like the woman had before the call, you're an entrepreneur. It takes a lot of work. You can't give up. I've had slow years where you wonder if it's worth it.
Yeah,
I can't imagine. You gotta keep going, and I really enjoy my freedom when it comes to those type of things, especially being out in the country.
Well, that's wonderful, Joan. I want to ask you. I mean, childcare, obviously, that's a big issue. That's come up over and over again, but health insurance also is coming up, and this issue about, in your 40s, your 50s, you're an entrepreneur, health insurance can be a real problem.
Yeah, I agree. We, I guess the Affordable Care Act didn't solve that, if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah,
of course. And in some cases, in Vermont, I think since that act was enacted, the costs have gone up. So I don't have an answer for that. That is extremely difficult, especially if you're a one-man show. Small businesses feel the brunt of it more than anybody else. One thing I will say that your previous caller just said about young people not going into the trades is a significant problem for the construction industry. We are working on talent pipeline management methodologies to get students activated early to go into those fields, because that would have a tremendous overhang on the possibility for growth in the we won't have anybody to build the buildings if we don't develop those trades. So and in Vermont, we also, it's a very it's an older state as well. We're the second oldest state. So we need young people coming in. We need immigrants. We need all of it to continue the vitality and the succession of these businesses that have been started by all these entrepreneurs.
I want to go to Lainey. And Lainey, you're in Minneapolis?
I am, yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in Minneapolis with my wife, and we're interested. We would love to have a little more land, be in a rural space. We really like the idea of being like in that space, but we are afraid a bit. We don't find many queer-friendly spaces. And I was wondering if you could speak to the idea of safety and diversity and maybe, you know, queer communities and other communities not.
Yeah. Oh, this is a really important issue. Ben?
Yeah. So for me, I've really dedicated my life to trying to improve the rural narrative. I believe that the narrative we're using to describe rural communities can be negative, and many times, rightfully so. We've gone through significant negative changes, the closing of businesses, you know, decline of agriculture as a primary industry, all of these things. And ultimately, when the narrative being painted about rural is so negative, people think, I could never do it. I could never move out there. I'm not a farmer. Well, we're not all farmers. In fact, the composition of the rural economy is diverse. When you, while any one small town may not have a diverse economy, when you start putting literally counties together, these kind of regions, they have a very diverse economy, occupationally, industrially. So ultimately, I think there are very loud voices out there that'll paint this picture that rural is in decline, that nobody wants to live there, that we're hollowing out our communities. We've got this brain drain. When on the other hand, we do have people that are choosing to move out every day. The stories we hear from Julia and Aaron, they're not exceptions of success. They are the rule. People continue to move out. We're doing research here at the University of Minnesota with a grant from the USDA to interview roughly and survey 15,000 newcomers across the state in our rural communities. This is regional centers. This is the prairie counties. This is the recreational counties. And to ask them, like, how did it go? When did you move there? How did you choose this community? But I think initially for me, kind of getting back to that narrative, like Lainey may have concerns because, you know, could never believe I could do it, right? I could never live out there. I could never move up to Hibbing and make a go of it for myself. But I think once you got there and you talked to people locally, you would find out they could. And in fact, here in Minnesota, so we've been doing this brain gain research for a number of years now. And across the state, we're very unique across the country in that we've got about 12 local people recruitment initiatives across the state. A few are the Get Rural Initiative in Western Minnesota. We've got Live Wide Open in Northwest. We've got Regen. We've got Fairmont Area Life. We've got all of these groups that have sprouted up that are doing work to help people make that transition easier, to not only improve the narrative within their community, but to improve the narrative about their community from outsiders. And why this matters for our kids is our kids may be living in communities where they believe there's nothing here for them. And their parents tell them, you need to get out to succeed. When in fact, when you talk to somebody who just moved there, they're like, we just moved here for opportunity. We love this place. So for us, it's trying to bridge some of those voices to help improve that community narrative.
So Joan, this issue of diversity is very important.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that if I could. So in Vermont, we have something called Stay to Stay Weekends. And what we encourage people to do is come and try it, like come for a visit. And we organize a welcome, either reception or meet and greet. And you could meet different people from the community, look for a house, check out a co-working space, and get a feel for the neighborhood, right? I mean, Vermont is a very progressive state. We were one of the first to recognize civil unions, same-sex marriage. So, it's going to depend very much on the town. And I say to towns ask me all the time, what can we do to recruit people? What can we do to recruit businesses? How do we do this? And I usually say, you know what? You got to be welcoming. And if you're not welcoming, you're not going to get the people. And even having said that, we've got, I think more than half the state is not state-born, like people are from away. So it's not that uncommon that you're going to have people from away. Sure, there's still going to be people that might feel a bit threatened by that. People are people, no matter where you go. It's really going to be a question of which town, which city, which state makes you feel like, okay, I think I could fit in here. This could work. And so sometimes just checking it out, visiting, seeing what you could do in a town or a village really helps. The great advantage of small-scale living is what I call it, is your ability to make a difference. When you're in the big city, great, you've got all these things to do, wonderful, but you're just another cog, right, in the wheel. And in a small town, they look for volunteers for everything from planning commissions, select boards, school boards, and what you do as an individual can make a difference. And that I find to be the most refreshing and kind of unspoken about advantage of small town living.
All right, well, let me, about this welcome mat, and I want to follow up with both of you, but I'll start out with you, Joan. Immigrants, you know, one of the open if worried about jobs, worried about, you know, restoring your housing stock, worried about people moving in, why not the welcome mat to immigrants?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big proponent of that for sure.
Okay.
I think that rural areas need immigrants. We need diverse economies, and that is a great way to encourage growth. The growth in metro areas is not just because the kids are flocking there. They also happen to be the most immigrants live in the metropolitan areas.
Ben?
So I'm a huge proponent of that.
Ben, this issue about immigration and immigrants moving into rural towns, rural Minnesota.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, Minnesota lags behind the rest of the country in terms of percentage of population that's foreign-born or of minority status. But really what we find is that the immigrants in Minnesota have been initially attracted to the regional centers, food processing areas, and are slowly starting to find homes across the state. You know, it's taken time. It does take time. When we migrate into a new country to learn the language, for your kids to feel comfortable. We see this along Prairie, where the community there really had to take advantage of the situation. But when we're talking about like first gen immigrants, like they don't have the value of even necessarily home ownership right off the bat. It's how
right.
do you have your family survive? So when we talk about communities that are welcoming, it is to what extent, I would say, not only do we welcome immigrants, but do we welcome anybody? We do. I mean, here in Extension, we've got a program called Make It Home, which is trying to bring together these disparate voices, because ultimately you don't know everybody in your small town. So when we do bring these people together, we want to have a community conversation about what this town means to them and what is that vision for the future. Joan, you've got a great program, the Orton Family Foundation there in Vermont. They've got a program mm-hmm. called Community Heart and Soul. I think yep. they're in roughly 50 mm-hmm. communities now. And mm-hmm. it is a place-based effort that that mm-hmm. brings people together to talk about what matters most to them. And what they find is that the diversity can actually be expressed in the commonalities they've got for the future.
Okay, I want to go to Deer River, Minnesota, to Nick, and we just have a short period of time left, Nick, but I wanted to hear from you.
I just wanted to make the comment that broadband is essential to entrepreneurship. It is certainly in our community and essential to education. I live very close to the Leech Lake Indian Reservation, and also childcare. I know I couldn't have opened up our business without the support of the Boys and Girls Club and their affordable child care and pre-K in this area. And the broadband has been essential to the elementary school and for the kids to be able to properly test and be connected to the larger world community. And
what is your business?
I own a 13 Main. It's a furniture store in the historic Bars Furniture Building. We had mentorship from the previous owners, which was vital, as well as broadband for things as simple as streaming music throughout our store. I also work for a mental health agency in the district here.
Wow.
And
Thank you very much. You are busy, and I really appreciate it. But now they're telling me it's time to move on. So, look, I want to thank Joan Goldstein is Commissioner for Economic Development in Vermont, and Ben Winchester is Research Fellow at the Extension Center for Community Vitality at the University of Minnesota. And thank to both of you for a wonderful conversation, and I'm somewhat optimistic about rural areas in our state and in Vermont, too.
I'd like to hear it.
Thank you.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.